against Bitcoin.
It's going up forever, Warren.
You're against Bitcoin, you're against freedom.
Welcome to another episode of Simply Bitcoin Live. We're streaming from the Halving Party in El Salvador. I got the legendary Tone Vase next to me. And of course, my legendary co-host, Optimus Fields, who is not optimistic today. He has a straight face. Highly disappointed, Opti. You got to smile, man. You're Optimus Fields.
It's not yet, bro. I'm looking at the chat.
Anyways, we got a great show for you guys lined up today. Breaking news, actually. News actually came out yesterday. We didn't have a chance to cover it. But Morgan Stanley is basically in competitions with UPS to become the first, quote, to use Cointelegraph's own words, the first Bitcoin ETF bank. So we're going to talk about that. And also, we have this No BS Bitcoin report about the Bitcoin revolution in Iran. You know, it's really interesting. You see this all around the world. People are continuing to use Bitcoin to escape tyrannical regimes. So pretty cool. So we'll have an update for you guys on that as well. And today is Satoshi Nakamoto's birthday, which coincidentally is on the same day as the 6102 order. Was that a coincidence? I don't know, man. I don't think that's a coincidence. And also we have a very, very special guest as well. We have Kent. He is the CEO and co-founder of Saz Mining. Saz Mining, I recently joined as an advisor, and it is Bitcoin mining as a service. They make Bitcoin mining easy to use. They take away all the complexities. Highly recommend them. Kent, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you. Thanks for being an advisor.
How you doing, Tone?
I'm good. Wow, I've been on the show in a while. Looking forward to it.
And, you know, Tone is a tequila connoisseur and a poker master as well. So I didn't go to the poker game last night.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. It was cool. But I think tonight we want to socialize. There's like a cigar and over the sunset. Sunset here is gorgeous.
Yes, it is.
We're going to smoke some cigars. I brought some good tequila. And it'll be a good night. We may or may not play. If we play, it'll be super late.
Wait, can we talk about the tequila story that I just heard behind the scenes?
I don't know about this.
Okay, so yeah, so I, I wanted to...
You got Tone a gift? Got him a gift?
Yeah, no. Like, I got invited to, like, a poker game, so I'm like, okay, you know, I know that Tone likes tequila. So the first time I brought him something, it was like Don Julio Blanco, and he looks at me, he's like, Nico, this is like a shit coin. Like, what the fuck are you doing? He's like, you got to get Reposado. I'm like, okay, Reposado. So the next time I got him a Casamigos, like a $100 bottle, Casamigos, Reposado, and I'm super happy going into there. We were playing poker at Doug's house in Miami. I'm like, all right, Tone, got you Casamigos. And he looks at me and he's like, you know, he's a nice guy. So he's not going to tell me, Nico, you got me shit. But I see on his face, he's like, Nico, you got me fucking shit again, bro. What are you doing? So, you know, but I'm learning, because next time, you know, I'll get you something even better. Next. And then you already told me the Clase Azul, because that's what I was going to go for.
Oh, that's terrible. Don't ever get Clase Azul. No, I have a whole like tequila guide, which I had sent to Nico on several occasions. And Don Julio does rank above Casamigos. Clase Azul ranks lower than both of them, unfortunately. Even though that's a $300 bottle, no one should ever, ever in their life buy or drink that. But there are good tequilas out there, but it's actually harder than it sounds. The only reason I give Nico a hard time is because he's been provided with a list of like 100 good tequilas, and he has to find the time to look at it.
All right, third time's the charm. So anyways, guys, it's going to be a great show. It's going to be the last time we're going to be streaming from El Salvador. Next week, on Wednesday, we're going to be streaming from Texas. And on Friday, we're going to be streaming live from the BitBlock Boom Conference. I believe Tone's going to be there as well.
I'll be there as well, yeah.
So it's going to be awesome. Lots of stuff to cover today. It's going to be a great show. So buckle up. Let's get started. But before we do that, I do want to give a very, very special shout out, of course, to our flagship sponsor. Who am I talking about? I'm talking about Bitcoin Well. Bitcoin Well is the best place to build your automatic self-custody Bitcoin stack. That's right. You can't buy Bitcoin on Bitcoin Well unless you're going to take self-custody. Help us make this self-custody the default in the United States. They're a publicly traded company coming out of Canada that recently expanded to all 50 U.S. states. So check out bitcoinwell.com/simplybitcoin. And you should definitely sign up. Help us make self-custody the standard like it should be. Also, they have the Bitcoin Jackpot Contest, which is currently live. The way that you enter it is you go to bitcoinwell.com/simplybitcoin. You enter into the contest. You sign up. You put your email in there. If you're an existing user, you go to the dashboard. You go to the rewards section. Every time you buy Bitcoin, you earn points. You could put those points towards the jackpot. And when the jackpot winner is going to be announced, it's going to be the day of the halving, so around April 20th, if things stay how they are, you have an opportunity to win. Currently, the jackpot is about 4.5 million Satoshis. That hasn't been updated yet. We've been giving away stuff as well, like a passport by Foundation Devices, a book by Seb Bunny, and seed plates as well. So guys, check out bitcoinwell.com, best place to build your automatic self-custody Bitcoin stack. All right, everybody, let's get some numbers.
The Bitcoin numbers.
Is your Bitcoin in cold storage really secure? Is your seed phrase really secure? Stampseed's do-it-yourself kit has everything you need to hammer your seed words into commercial-grade titanium plates instead of just writing them on paper. Don't store your generational wealth on paper. Paper is prone to water damage, fire damage. You want to put your generational wealth on one of the strongest metals on planet Earth, titanium. Your words are actually stamped into this metal plate with this hammer and these letter stamps. And once your words are in, they aren't going anywhere. No risk of the plate breaking apart and pieces falling everywhere. Titanium stamped seeds will survive nearly triple the heat produced by a house fire. They're also crush-proof, waterproof, non-corrosive, and time-proof, all things that paper is not, allowing you to hodl your Bitcoin with peace of mind for the long haul. Stamp your seed on Stampseed.
All right, everybody, I made it incredibly easy for you guys. You could scan the QR code on your screen right now, or you could check the link in the video description. Store your generational wealth on titanium. Don't store it on paper. Imagine having that conversation with your grandchildren, like, and you lost your Bitcoin because you stored it on paper. That's bad.
Hey, Nico, we got a super chat already with Stampseed. So shouts out to, I don't know how to say your name, Nona Me Extra, super chat, $5 Canadian. Bought the Stampseed full kit with your promo and just got it. I love it and very solid. Insert feels good meme here.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much for the super chat. And again, yeah, guys, you want to store your generational wealth properly, definitely get yourself, store your generational wealth on titanium. Anyways, at the time of recording, the Bitcoin price is 68,000 flat. Sats per dollar, 1,471. Block height, 837,855. Blocks to having, 2,145. Having estimate, April 20th, 2024. It would be absolutely hilarious if the Bitcoin halving happened on 420. Like that would be great. Anyways, total Lightning Network capacity, 4,339. Bitcoin capacity value, $295 million. Realized monetary inflation, 1.73%. Market capitalization is 1.34 trillion. Bitcoin versus gold market cap, 9.68%. I had a video for us to kind of react to, but we have such a superstar panel today on today's show that I kind of just wanted to talk about this particular subject. So what am I talking about? Today is Satoshi Nakamoto's birthday, right? I don't know if it's his actual birthday, his real birthday, but It's very symbolic in a way, because his birthday is April 5th, 1975. That was the same day, 91 years ago, that President Roosevelt signed Executive Order 6102, banning American citizens from owning gold, right? So I think it's very symbolic, like just like the Genesis block and the message in the Genesis block, you know, Chancellor on the brink of the second bailout for banks. I think Bitcoin in general is very symbolic. And, you know, I think it really shows why Bitcoin was invented. Like it really, this is, you know, this tool is about the separation of money and state. This tool is literally like created and crafted to protect you and to make your wealth, I'm going to borrow Tone Vase's IP, unconfiscatable wealth, right? So anyways, I'm going to throw it on to Tone. Tone's an OG, man. You've been here quite a long time. You know, are we reading into it or was this on purpose?
So I actually don't remember how that got associated with his birthday. Maybe he said it in one of the early chats.
I think it was part of the Bitcoin Forum birthday that he added. Like it was, I think that's where it's from.
My guess is it's he did that on purpose. Just to mark those dates. That was a very important time in history. And while there's a lot of misconception about that day, the reason why Roosevelt was able to do that was because 90% of all the gold was stored at the banks by the people. The banks were holding it on behalf of people. No one had ever gotten arrested for it because it was a $10,000 fine and like, I think 10 years in prison or whatever. But the government never went door to door. They never arrested any single person for gold. People were more trusty of the government back then. So a lot of people voluntarily turned in their gold. But if you didn't turn in your gold, you weren't really criminally or civilly liable for it. You just held on to it. Roosevelt also had a carve out for collector coins. He was a stamp collector himself. So in that bill, gold coins were actually exempt. So it was like gold bullion and gold bars, which is also why today, if you're going to store some gold, you should have Bitcoin. But if you're going to store some gold, gold coins are way better than gold bars. And he was able to confiscate it from the banks because everyone concentrated and let the banks hold the gold for them, which has been my concern for years. And I've been bringing up this topic for probably 7 years at least now on my YouTube channels, that the more people allow their Bitcoin to be custodied by regulated custodians, the more likely Order 6102 is going to repeat in the future, probably on its 100th anniversary or something, somewhere around that area, that the government is going to try to confiscate all the Bitcoin. And with these ETFs, this is becoming even more scarier today than it was back then. I was so happy when the government sold all the Bitcoins they confiscated from the original Silk Road bust. It was like 400,000 Bitcoin, and they sold them all when Bitcoin price was like $1,000 or something like that. So that was good. They didn't hold on to those. So I'm going to leave it there. But I think he just put that down because he knew the significance of the date and he wanted others to have a significance of the date.
Amen to that. And just to kind of add to what Tone was saying about the ability, the reason that they were able to get away with the 6102 order, right, was because of gold's physical characteristics and people find it convenient just to custody it with a handful of banks. And you're seeing a very similar pattern in terms of the ETFs, right? The vast majority of the Bitcoin that these ETFs supposedly own are custodied with Coinbase, literally like one institution, right? So you're kind of creating a very similar situation where the government could confiscate it in, you know, it's like one executive order. I know there was like a Supreme Court challenge, but once the executive order was signed by FDR, it was quickly put into law by Congress as well, right? So anyway, and I believe some of the ETFs actually even have disclosures as well, warning people about, you know, potential government confiscation. Anyways, I'm going to pass it on to Kent. Kent, what are your thoughts on this, man? It's a pretty historic. It's always a historic day on Bitcoin. But, happy birthday, Satoshi Nakamoto, supposedly.
Yeah, happy birthday to Satoshi, man. I mean, we're all here and indebted to his service, right, for the Bitcoin network. I think he was symbolic enough with that first block with what he put in there, you know, Chancellor on the brink of first bailout or second bailout, that it's clear he was into symbology. And so it would not be shocking at all that his birthday was chosen intentionally to highlight the risk of 6102. And, you know, I think you guys are touching on the right thing. Fundamentally, these ETFs are custodying a lot of Bitcoin. And while I may not have too much worry about the custodian or the wrapper around it, you know, the risk to me is just the incentive. You know, people tend to follow incentives, organizations follow incentives, and now there's a honeypot incentive for a government, the U.S. government, to come along and swipe that big pot of Bitcoin, and I don't like that.
100%. You definitely, especially now that we have the tools where, you know, you have the, and again, it's just a matter of a little bit of personal responsibility. I'm looking at BTC sessions in the corner, watching some tutorials. And then, you know, you could learn how to take self-custody. Like it's, you know, and you have the ability to do so. It's not that difficult. If you can order something on Uber Eats, if you could send a wire, you could take self-custody. It reminds me of that, the movie Dodgeball. It's like, if you could throw a wrench, you could throw a ball, something like that. Anyways, Opti, what's your take on this, man?
Yeah, not to recap what everyone was saying, but, you know, we're all indebted to Satoshi. So even if it's not really his birthday, happy birthday to Satoshi, and kind of to what Kent was saying. I just love all the little Easter eggs that Satoshi left for us, whether it's the Genesis block, whether it's his birthday. And it really just goes to show why Bitcoin was created in the first place. You know, a lot of people speculate on the reasons for Bitcoin, and it usually goes back to the same things, like avoiding a 6102, separating money from state, the bailouts. It's all going back to the same place at the end, that you want to get the government out of your money and you want to hold something that cannot be debased. And that's why we're all here for Bitcoin. So happy birthday, Satoshi.
Happy birthday, Satoshi. Tone, are we going to celebrate? And Kent's going to be there in spirit, of course. Are we going to celebrate on the beach tonight with some cigars and very highly chosen and proper whiskey?
Yeah, we got the official, it's just right there in the agenda, cigars and scotch, but we definitely have some good tequila bottles to add to that mix. So it'll be a lot of fun this evening.
I am 100% going to drink good tequila tonight. It's going to be approved by Tone Vase first, and I'm extremely excited to celebrate Satoshi Nakamoto's birthday. I don't know if it's his real birthday, but, you know, the symbolism is extremely powerful. Anyways, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the news. We have a lot to talk about today. Let's check it out. Here we go.
The Daily News.
I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Foundation Devices. It's self-custody done right. They built a premium grade hardware wallet called Passport right here in the US. It's fully open source and verifiable. It's the most intuitive Bitcoin wallet designed with a UX reminiscent of a simple feature phone. So you will know how to navigate it and use it the moment you pick it up. Get your Bitcoin off exchanges and into your own hands in just a few minutes. Experience the peace of mind that comes with taking ownership of your own keys. After a massive sellout during Bitcoin Miami 2023, the Passport is back in stock at foundationdevices.com. Bitcoin only, open source verifiable, completely air gap security model, gorgeous design craft, premium grade materials. If you're thinking about getting your Bitcoin off exchanges, this is the one for you. Check out the Passport link in the show notes below to learn more.
All right, everybody. After all that conversation that we just had, literally, guys, not your keys, not your cheese. Get yourself a hardware wallet. And of course, we recommend our sponsor, Passport by Foundation Devices. It's completely open source. And if you pair it up with the Envoy app, it is so incredibly easy to use. Anyways, I do want to give a quick ETF update. We run through these every single day. Okay, we got a comment. Life is too short to not drink good tequila. I want to emphasize the word good. You only know what good tequila is like if you get access to Tone Vase Tequila Guide. Anyway, you should definitely, put that somewhere, bro.
Yeah, it's somewhat public, but I should probably tweet it out and like have it as a pinned tweet or something.
Anyways, I appreciate the comment. Okay. All right, guys. So quick ETF update continues. It seems like BlackRock and Fidelity continue to stack sats. BlackRock currently has 257,000 Bitcoin, and Fidelity has 147,000 Bitcoin. Even the ARK 21 shares Bitcoin ETF, Cathie Woods, is up to 43,337. So I think there was 10 ETFs that applied. It seems like there's clear winners here. And it seems like it's the BlackRock, Fidelity, and the ARK one. It seems like, you know, there's other ones as well, but not as much as those guys. But look, I mean, the trend lines are clear. They obviously continue to stack sats. And Tone, I think you're a little bit more knowledgeable on this specific subject than I am. The Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, it seems to be falling off a cliff. Why are people getting rid of that? I know that if people wanted to get exposure to Bitcoin before the ETFs, a lot of people, you know, bought GBTC, right? And then they converted that into a trust. So do you have like kind of any insight as to why the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust is unpopular? Why are people trying to get rid of it?
Yeah, so the main reason is a management fee. So GBTC had a monopoly on the Bitcoin ETF space. It wasn't an official spot ETF, but it was like 98% similar to a spot ETF before January 11th when the rest were allowed to function. And they were charging a 2% management fee. That means
that number you see there, 326,000 that they still have, every year they sell 2% of that, which comes out to about 6,000 Bitcoin. 2% on that number. And before it was 600,000 Bitcoin that they were holding. So 2% of that number is like 12,000 Bitcoin that they got to keep and sell. They sell a little bit every day, but at the end of the year, that adds up. And when these other ETFs came out, they came out with a competitive fee of like 0.25% versus their 2%. Grayscale lowered their fee to just 1.5%. But if you think of it on a 1 year long basis, if you're going to have $1 million in this ETF, do you want it to devalue 1.5% or do you want it to devalue only 0.25%? So that's the main reason why people are exiting GBTC and entering other ETFs that are not going to charge them, you know, six times more for managing that product. And the other reason is there was a lot of companies that held a lot of GBTC shares, like 3AC and Genesis, and these companies kind of went belly up. And I'm sure in the news that you covered, and a lot of them are now forced to sell their GBTC holdings as well. So those two reasons is enough. I actually think if Grayscale doesn't lower that fee to be competitive at under 0.5%, it'll bleed all the way down to zero eventually.
100%. And I want to pass it on to Kent in regards to some of the largest, you know, Bitcoin holders right now in terms of the public company level are these public miners, right? I'm seeing Marathon Digital Hold Digital Holdings. It seems like they're the second largest publicly traded miner with, the second largest publicly traded company in terms of Bitcoin holdings with 16,930. As the CEO of a, you know, Bitcoin mining service provider, you know, is that something that you guys, you know, would you guys consider holding Bitcoin on your company's treasury? Is that like a strategy that you guys consider?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're still fairly early stage startup, right? So for us, most of the Bitcoin that we acquire as a management service fee, because that's our model, right? So, you know, we don't mark up mining rigs. We don't mark up the monthly hosting fees. We take a share of the block reward on the back end, and that's just 15%. And, you know, it's done in a non-custodial way. The mining pool splits the block reward when it's sent out. And that 15% is what funds our business. We're still at the point where, you know, we're a profitable company, but we have to sell our Bitcoin. But we absolutely have treasury management plans to hold that Bitcoin that we receive for management fee on our balance sheet, as other sort of standard self-mining companies do.
Absolutely. And let me ask you something. So what is the, like, what percentage when you guys reach that point? Because Simply Bitcoin is kind of in a similar situation where, you know, we're a startup kind of media company and we're starting to look into putting a, you know, percentage, or we actually already doing so. But what percentage of, you know, do you think is responsible for a startup to, you know, allocate to Bitcoin?
You know, I think it's a unique position to be in the mining industry, because there's an expectation, because you're acquiring Bitcoin, that you're going to hold Bitcoin on your balance sheet. So I think you're given a little bit more grace to hold more Bitcoin as a result. But I think fairly responsible. I actually think in terms less in percentage and more in a runway standpoint. Like, I think that you should have at least 3 months of fiat on hand for runway, and then the rest stashed away as Bitcoin. To me, that seems responsible. Now, granted, I'm at the point where I haven't had to make those treasury management rules for myself just yet, so I've not studied it as deeply as I probably should. So take my comments for that. It's not deeply thought out, but that's my initial off the cuff.
I'd
manage it.
100%. Making payroll, right? Making payroll and like making
exactly.
The expenses and living to fight another day. I completely get you on that standpoint. But yeah, it's a sword that cuts both ways, right? You know, bull market, it's great to have a percentage of your treasury in Bitcoin. And then, you know, if we have a downturn, it's like, oh God, I have to pay 15% more, right? Anyways, I do want to cover this specific article, and we have Tone Vays with us today. Tone, for anyone that doesn't know, dude, you worked at Bear Stearns, right?
I did, yeah, during the collapse.
This is why Tone became a Bitcoiner and became a tequila connoisseur. But no, that's crazy. And I'm so glad that Tone's with us today to cover this article. Morgan Stanley wants to beat UBS to become first Bitcoin ETF bank. Of course, the titlees is framed in a way to kind of get you interested in the in what's actually going on. But I still think it's significant just because of the size of these banks, right? Morgan Stanley has $1.46 trillion under management, and UBS is bigger at $3.96 trillion US dollars under management.
When did UBS become a Bitcoin bank?
I mean, this is what the article is going to cover, right? This is what the article is going to cover. Let's see what it says. The launch of spot Bitcoin exchange traded funds in the United States has fueled rivalry between investment banks over which will be the first wirehouse to add the products. Morgan Stanley is hoping to beat UBS and becoming the first wirehouse to fully approve the Bitcoin ETF. Citing international Morgan Stanley notes, Andrew said that the bank, quote, may announce a few days before its move to into Bitcoin ETFs. He mentioned that global banks have been actively talking about the Bitcoin ETF addition as a race. Bloomberg expert Eric, I can't pronounce that last name, added to Andrew's X thread, noting that neither Morgan Stanley nor UBS have added Bitcoin ETFs, citing a solid source, still in a holding pattern in a compliance game of chicken, waiting for one of them to go first, then gives rest cover. So probably will be an all at once type moment when that is in question. Prior to posting the new update, Andrew reported that UBS plans to add Bitcoin ETFs to its platform between April 8th and April 12th next week. The latest speculation about Morgan Stanley's potential rival move against UBS comes a few weeks after Andrew reported that the bank is set to approve Bitcoin ETFs. Quote, several sources confirmed that Morgan Stanley is set to approve Bitcoin ETFs on its platform in the next 2 weeks. Cointelegraph approached Morgan Stanley and UBS for a comment regarding the potential addition of spot Bitcoin ETFs to their platforms, but did not receive a response at the time of publication. Okay, so it seems like a lot of speculation in the article, a lot of rumors, but I'll tell you this, and I saw this for a fact, it seems like Goldman Sachs is avoiding it altogether, Vanguard is avoiding it altogether, but I can't help to think of Bitcoin's irresistible incentives, right? I think, I don't think it's a coincidence that the Vanguard CEO resigned a month after he said that Vanguard was never going to add, an ETF product to their offerings. And then you have Larry Fink going on Legacy Financial Media saying that the Bitcoin ETF was the best performing ETF in ETF history, not to mention the fact that out of the 3,100 ETFs in the United States, two Bitcoin ETFs are already in the top five, and they've only been around a couple of months. So I think, whether it's these large banks, I think that they can take a stance of, oh, we're not going to allow this for only a short amount of time until market forces do what market forces do best. So Tone, for someone that comes from the traditional financial industry, what's your take on this?
Yeah, so Larry Fink has been a little, I guess, he's not lying, but he's being a little misingenuous. The reason why his ETF performed so well is because everyone exited GBTC. So I would say 80% of the reason why BlackRock and Fidelity and all the others performed so well is because like 80% of it was people migrating from GBTC to their product, which isn't what happened back when gold ETF launched and others. So that's not exactly accurate. As far as these banks offering the ETF product, I'm not sure what that means because the majority of the people, they're not trading on a bank's trading platform. They trade with professional brokers like Interactive Brokers, like Ameritrade, like Charles Schwab. These are professional brokers that you could have traded these ETFs and held these ETFs from day one. So, it's great that these banks are going to offer them, but that doesn't matter to any hedge funds. That doesn't matter to any professional investors. The only people this might matter to is these high net worth, older individuals that depend on banks' financial advisors to guide their retirement accounts or their accounts. I wouldn't exactly call these people with the money
professional investors, but it's dependent on their managers. It's good. It's an addition, but it's not like it's the big thing here. Any professional shop that invests and trades, or any individual that has full control of their own investments, they already have access to these products. And I know people that have switched from keeping their money at Vanguard for their retirement, as long as they control what assets are in those accounts. They switch to other managers of their retirement accounts. This is only for people that don't have control of their own assets.
And I want to double back on that, because that part is really interesting, and I haven't heard that before, specifically from Bitcoin Twitter and from the news that I've been covering. So you don't believe that Larry Fink is just being a salesman? Like, Larry Fink is just, you know, he's just like, look, this is great, but it's actually the outflows from the Grayscale Trust that is causing the iShares, the BlackRock ETF, to perform the way it has? Or do you see, or is there no institutional demand at all for Bitcoin?
No, there's some demand. Prior to these ETFs launching, there was about 600 something thousand Bitcoin in cold storage of all the ETFs at the time, which was just Grayscale. Today, there's 800,000. So an additional 200,000 Bitcoin has been added to people's investments in this type of product, whether it was a GBTC trust before the ETFs were approved versus now. But the other thing people don't realize, it's not that they didn't have access to it before. Anyone could have held GBTC in their retirement account. I did. What changed was literally the name BlackRock. I have family members that have worked in finance longer than me at more important institutions. And after 10 years of me telling them about Bitcoin, they had no interest. Only when they saw an article that BlackRock is going to launch a Bitcoin ETF, it's like a light switch in their head, right? It didn't matter what happened to 10 years prior. The moment BlackRock approved it, suddenly it became interesting to them. So that's basically the only reason. And it increased the total Bitcoin in these products from 600,000 to 200,000, but we're also entering a bull market. It was going to increase anyway. My guess is maybe 100,000 Bitcoin was added to the stash. So maybe, what, that's 15%, 20% at most. It's not as big as they say.
Gotcha. So one more question before we pass it on to Kent. So Tone, if you take a look at the gold ETFs, right, when they were approved, you know, within a period of 1 to 2 years, I think gold like 7x or something, right? It had this huge, upward momentum. Do you foresee the same thing happening Bitcoin after, you know, everything that you said, basically that the institutional demand that's being promoted on Twitter isn't as it seems?
I think 7x is a little bit too optimistic, but something like 3 to 4x is possible. Just like with gold, I mean, this is happening in a bull market. It's happening when there is an appetite for people to invest in stuff, in speculative things. And Bitcoin was going to go up with or without these ETFs. I mean, the bear market lasted for an unreasonably long time this time, and it was very painful. And now we're in a bull market. ETFs help, but they're not I don't think they're the main driver now. They could become a main driver if a lot of people start investing all their money in them. But also keep in mind, the more people invest money in these ETFs, the more governments, will go back to the first story we did, the more these ETFs skyrocket. If Bitcoin does go up 10x from here, and the majority is due to people putting that money into the ETFs, that creates a honeypot and creates a dangerous situation. So sometimes we have to be careful what we really wish for.
100%. All right, so passing on to Kent. Kent, the hash rate continues to make all-time highs. It's literally going absolutely parabolic. But the halving is around the corner, right? And for anyone who doesn't know, right, the block subsidy is going to be cut in half. I think it's 6.25 is going to be cut to 3.125, if my math is correct. Kent, what, you know, as a Bitcoin, you know, as the CEO of a Bitcoin mining service provider, You know, what would you say? What's going to happen with this halving? What advice would you give to clients, customers? You know, especially with the hash rate continuing to go up, are the public mining companies going to get hurt? Or is the average everyday Bitcoin miner? What are you telling them?
Man, it feels like every halving, this is my third, is the first time, right? Like everybody gets quite nervous and shaky around it. And I think if you look at history, and I'm sort of a price cycle maximalist at this point, and assuming the Bitcoin price does what it has every other cycle, you know, the key is to just survive what comes next, right? What I see right now is everybody's like overclocking machines, pushing them hard, just trying to take advantage of every spare sat that they can get out of their terahash. And then when the halving comes, then basically your hash price, so the dollars per terahash per day, is going to be cut in half in fiat terms. And at that point, we're going to see how much hash rate comes offline, because there is a percentage of hash rate right now that is older generation mining rigs, just anything that can be profitable right now. So I anticipate we'll see some. How much? As much as maybe 30%, I would say, on the aggressive side. But I suspect it's less, because the hash price right now is much higher than it was during the depths of the bear market. And so what I mean by that is that if the halving were to occur basically today, we'd see the revenue for your average miner drop slightly lower than the bear market last year. And many older generation, or S19s, let's say, generation mining rigs were still able to run profitably during that time frame. So some pullback in hash rate, not a lot, but what comes next is the time period when Bitcoin's price runs. And that is the most attractive opportunity for mining, right? Because at that point is when everybody wants to get into mining, but deploying hardware, finding rack space, finding electricity, that takes time. You can't just click a button and acquire all that. So staying plugged in, staying alive through that potential bear stretch, not bear stretch in per se of like Bitcoin's price action, but, you know, slim picking stretch before Bitcoin's price starts to really appreciate. That's kind of the key to being able to get the gold at the end of the rainbow.
So, and I want to talk about that, right? Because, you know, that's a very interesting topic that you just mentioned. Are you guys prepared? Is SaaS mining prepared for, you know, the so-called, I can't call it a gold rush, a Bitcoin rush that's going to happen, with the incoming, if Bitcoin, you know, follows its previous cycles, price-wise, are you guys prepared for that oncoming Bitcoin rush of people that, want to get into Bitcoin mining?
As prepared as one can be for an early stage startup, right? We're in our second year of operation. Customers seem to be, you know, fairly happy with us, and the platform's running fairly well. But, you know, the challenge really, and I'm going to credit Bob Burnett from Barefoot Mining, the CEO over there, for giving me this framework. But, you know, the problem with mining in general is that it operates on a three-legged stool. And the three legs of that stool are ASICs, your mining rigs, capital, the money to buy those mining rigs, and then energy costs. And those three legs, unfortunately, are never all three available at the same time. So why I say that is we're coming out of the bear market. And during the bear market, what you had was energy was accessible, ASICs were fairly low cost. However, capital was quite difficult because everybody was scared to get into the space. Now, as we move into the bull market, what becomes inaccessible is energy, as everybody's rushing to find the cheapest energy, and mining machines will start to get more expensive, but the capital starts to flow. So that's the challenge of our business model, is how to juggle that competing set of priorities that the market gives you.
Yeah.
Hey, Ken, I got a question. So are you expecting like a fire sale and a lot of like mining rigs as operations start to shut down after the halving if they're not profitable? Because I know mining equipment, like as you said, is very expensive right now. But in about 2 months, will people be able to buy cheap equipment if you say you want to do a hobby miner at home?
So I actually am not seeing too much price appreciation in ASICs just yet. Things have actually been fairly steady state, which is kind of surprising. It makes me question, you know, how this cycle plays out. I mean, we're going to need to see some serious price appreciation, I think, before we start to see pressure on the manufacturers. That said, what I do see will become quite cheap is the mining rigs that people no longer operate that are not as competitive. So this is, if there's any S9s left on the network, those are going to be quite cheap. You know, I think those will, you know, basically be obsolete this cycle. And what I see replacing the Bitmain S9, which was, gosh, I can't remember what year that was released, is like, I think 2016, is really the S19. The S19 is going to be the new sort of base model. And that'll work in some really low cost settings. But I think in any higher cost energy settings, the S19 is probably going to start to get sunsetted. And there's some nuance in this, right? Because the S19 was the first in that series. There's the S19 Pro, the J Pro, J Pro Plus, and I'm talking about the very initial one that came out. Gosh, I think that was 2021, 2022. I think that we're going to start to see pressure on that to drop off, and those will be quite cheap.
So another thing also, Kent, and you know, and I remember because I actually got into the industry. I think I've talked to you about this, Kent, but I got into Bitcoin through Bitcoin mining. And I remember that in the earlier days, the shelf life of a lot of these ASICs was a whole lot shorter. I mean, and then you kind of heard that with the, you know, I'm sure you've heard this, Kent, right? The theme with the S9, right? It's like, no, this is going to die, you know, this is whatever. But that machine lasted a very long time. There's, you know, there's that joke where it's like, if you have S9s, just send them to Venezuela because they're still mining it over there. So, you know, miners are lasting longer, right? And is that a trend that's going to continue?
Simple answer, yes. So yeah, the S19 is like the AK-47 of our industry, right? It just continues to survive forever. But no, I think there's actually physics at play here. And so I come back to the basic of the transistor size that is driving these ASICs, right? And right now, the furthest ASICs along are about 5 nanometer. And I think we've got a drop to maybe 3 and maybe 2 after that. But otherwise, we've pretty much hit the limits of physics for what you can do with silicon technology for ASIC efficiency, right? And so what I see is the curves. It's like this asymptotic, I can never say that word quite right, curve, right, that's starting to level out. So actually right now, I think, is kind of a Goldilocks time period to get started in mining, right? Like, you can acquire your Bitcoin at a cheaper price than you can on an exchange, and you have an opportunity for a longer term play in the mining sector, because you're not going to have to replace your hardware near as soon. Now, you know, what we see is the S9 lasted from 2016 till basically today. There's probably still some that are going to operate even after the halving. I have no idea. But, you know, then there'll be the S19, which came out 2020, 2021 sort of time frame. And so I expect that trend will continue to stretch out for useful life for mining machines. And that makes it actually easier for a business like ours to build a business around providing service to folks that want to mine.
Absolutely. And let's definitely dive deep into SaaS mining during the culture segment. But first, I do want to give a very special shout out to our sponsor. Of course, I'm talking about the Orange Pill app. Stack friends who stack sats. The Orange Pill app is Bitcoin's social layer. Bitcoiners are going to be some of the most influential and powerful people in the next 5 to 10 years. It'd probably be a good idea to, you know, build up that Bitcoin friend list, so to speak. The Orange Pill app has a filtration system so that when you go on the Orange Pill app, you're not going to have those messages from you know, random people saying, hey, if you send me one Bitcoin, I'll send you two. You know, they really, really focus on having only Bitcoiners on the app. It's a great place to find Bitcoiners in your locality. So if you're going to a new city, if you're traveling, you can pull up the Orange Pill app and you'll see Bitcoiners around you. And it's the number one app for Bitcoin only events, right? So you can create a Bitcoin only event on the Orange Pill app. You could advertise it on the Orange Pill Lop. If you want to reach me and Opti very, very quickly, you could find us on the Simply Bitcoin group chat in the Orange Pill app. You could also send me a direct message. I am an advisor for the company, and I highly recommend it. It's a great way to connect with other Bitcoiners. So check out the Orange Pill app today. You can scan the QR code or check the link in the video description.
The Daily Culture.
All right, I do want to give a shout out to Kabeem Racks, their most trusted place to buy, sell, and host mining equipment. You can check out their racks by scanning the QR code on your screen or checking the link in the video description. You can check out their inventory on their Telegram marketplace. You could also connect with a member of their sales team. They make purchasing their products easy and transparent. And you could also sell your mining equipment with them. Access their vast network of domestic and international customers when you sell your mining equipment with Kabeem Racks. So check out the QR code or check the link in the video description. Now, back to Kent. Kent, you said something really interesting, and you kind of buried the lead over there. One of the things, and I had to write it down to ask you about it. You said you can acquire Bitcoin cheaper than on exchange if you're mining it. What did you mean by that?
Well, I think one of the things that I've experienced, so I come originally from the rooftop solar sector, and I got to live through a unique experience there, right? Like rooftop solar was very much an emergent industry like Bitcoin mining is, and shares a lot of actual similarities. You know, they're both decentralized, disruptive, distributed. Profits are constrained by an energy network, and you're importing your manufactured good from China. And one of the things that I experienced there was that there was just a complete transition in the way it was talked about, and it met the market where it was at and caused capital to unlock and flow into the space, and caused a lot of sort of the more technical approaches to rooftop solar to move to the background. And it's my perception that we're going through something similar. And I think what I've realized is that there's great third-party models out there that we utilize. I mean, Galaxy Digital is the one that we use for the cost to mine a Bitcoin. And just plugging the data in for our opportunity into this model shows that the current cost to mine a Bitcoin pre-halving is $24,000. Post-halving, that'll be $48,000. So either way, mining Bitcoin at SAS Mining is at a discount compared to the price on an exchange. And frankly, when you think about it, it makes sense why so much capital is flowing into mining. To date, that has sort of been behind a closed door because you need to figure it all out on your own. And, you know, we're sort of the avant-garde for creating mining as a service to make it easy for the masses to access this. But that's the ultimate driver, is it's lower cost to acquire Bitcoin via mining than purchasing it on an exchange. And so really, that's who we see as our primary competitors, is the exchanges in the long term.
So, and you said something really interesting, John. I don't know if you don't want to say something.
I mean, I got questions. So when people mine, what pool do they mine with? Because like the pool you mine with also makes a big difference. I'm a miner as well. And, you know, you have to choose your pool wisely. I'm with the pool that more benefits the Bitcoin network. So I'm giving up some of my profit on mining Bitcoin in order to benefit the Bitcoin network by being with a true decentralized mining pool. Now, we can name it, but I guess we don't have to. I don't know if you promote stuff or not. But in general, how do you navigate that aspect of mining?
Yeah, this is one of the more tricky parts of our business model, right? So our revenue and how we make money is dependent on the integration that we have with the mining pool, because we provide the mining pool, technical instruction to separate the block reward and send just 15% to us and 85% to our client. And because of that, it takes development capacity, and we only have one mining pool that we offer right now, and that's Luxor. The mining pool fee is great, you know, just over 1% because of the hash rate that we're delivering to the mining pool. However, the flip side is that we have to control that, and we need to and want to build more mining pool integrations, including to the one that you're mentioning that I'm not sure if we should be naming, but that's been a common requested feature that we plan to deliver to our clients as soon as we've got the development capacity to do so.
Yeah, I'll let Nico name it. He knows what pool I'm talking about.
Yeah, I'm talking. So Tone's talking about Ocean. Went to the Ocean event. It was crazy. You know, saw Luke trying to break a champagne bottle, and eventually the champagne bottle was broken. And it was the christening, right? I didn't even know that the event was going to be like that. And then, you know, you get there, he's Jack Dorsey. And yeah, so what Ocean is doing is very, very cool. And I think it's a step in the right direction to further, the decentralized Bitcoin. So another thing, Kent, that I wanted to focus on, right, is the you guys, and I think you guys absolutely nailed this, is the usability of SaaS mining. So you go to the SaaS mining, you buy an ASIC. It's incredibly easy to use. You guys focused on the user experience of the dashboard that you guys have. And that's really what you mean by when you say, Bitcoin mining as a service, right? You're really providing that user experience, that premium user experience. And that's not something that I would say hosters provide, right? They don't do that. The infamous one that I think tarnished the whole industry, that I'm not going to say, but you guys know what I'm talking about. Starts with the letter C. You guys really, really focused on the user experience, right? So why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we raised some pre-seed capital in 2021, and we decided, we looked at the growth of the company you're talking about and said, geez, it seems like there's an opportunity here. I've got a bit of a background in software and understand the energy markets. Like, let's go build a platform to make this easy and accessible. And when we did that, the first thing that we did was focus on a design firm, really. And we found a design firm that won awards with Google and Apple to prototype and put it out there in the market. And, you know, there's this funny thing about a software product that is easy to use and understand and is intuitive. It seems simple. But what you realize eventually with design is that simplicity is actually the result of a lot of complicated effort and design decisions to get it intuitive. So, yeah, I think we've hit the nail on the head there. Our customers seem to love it, seems to come across as completely intuitive. And, you know, the analogy I use is, if you've not used this before, but you recall what life was like before Uber, it was kind of like hailing a taxi. It's kind of how most hosted Bitcoin mining is right now, as compared to having the app on your phone to, use Uber to call a taxi to exactly where you are. And I think that's what we're doing is, you know, focus on unlocking that customer experience so that the capital can flow and more folks can have access. And, you know, here's the benefit as a Bitcoiner to the entire ecosystem: the more people that actually mine, the more people care about the mining sector. And that is ultimately the capital that has the vested interest and serves as the social layer of protection for our industry. You see the strongest lobby groups in Washington right now are coming from the mining sector. And so I think it's good as Bitcoiners that we have more opportunities for mining as a service, so more people can get involved and have a stake in the outcome. And I don't mean stake in the outcome as proof of stake, but actually it just has skin in the game.
Absolutely, 100%. And another thing also, right, is that mining has a huge learning curve, right? So you guys make it easy to do. But the thing that I would say also, Ken, and I've brought this up to you before, right, is when you are using a mining service provider like SaaS Mining, there's a tremendous amount of, and this is something that, you know, the company that cannot be named completely dropped the ball on. There's a tremendous amount of trust, right? Not only in the support aspect, but you are essentially putting your machines with someone else, a third party. I love what you guys do. I endorse it. Obviously I'm an advisor, but is that something that you could talk about, right? The trust factor of that, right?
Yeah. It is such an important aspect of our business that my guys are sick of me saying this, but I just tell them, look, we win and lose on reputation, period. This business requires a trust trade-off. The core problem that we're solving is getting low-cost power is non-trivial for your average person. And as a result, you need to trust somebody else to source that low-cost power for you. So there's no way that you can decentralize that aspect unless you're going to go do all of it yourself. And then that creates a technical barrier that is difficult to overcome for your average person, right? And not only technical, but capital barrier, right? We estimate that you need at least $5 million to really go set up your own mining system for yourself, and let alone the education side of things, right? So, I mean, that's just a tall order for most folks. So you've got to give up some element of trust, which means that we as a business need to earn that trust. And the way we do that is through our reputation. So really have a hyper focus on that. And as a result, I think we've actually been growing at a more measured pace, because what we don't want to do is to get out over our skis, oversell a situation, and then wind up having to walk it back and have an egg on our face.
Yeah, like the company that cannot be named. They definitely sold rack space and machines they did not have. All right, so
let me mention just one thing about that, because I think that there's actually a difference in incentive model, Nico, right? Like, we're not trying to make money selling mining machines. We're not trying to make money selling the electricity. Instead, we've aligned our incentive by taking just a small portion of the block reward. That now means that we care about exactly the same things our customers do, which is, hey, how do we get your machine plugged in quickly? How do we make sure that we keep it up a long time? How do we make sure that if there's an issue with it, it gets repaired right away? Like, if your money is being made on the front end of the business, you have a completely different set of incentives.
100%. And aligned incentives is something that is extremely important, right? As the great American HODL said, you know, no one is better than their incentives. So, Kent, why don't you walk us through, essentially, someone is like, they're interested in Bitcoin mining. They hear you're like, okay, wow. So it's cheaper to, you know, essentially I can acquire Bitcoin cheaper than I could if I just bought it spot Bitcoin on an exchange. Why don't you walk us through the flow, right? So you go to sazmining.com right now, you know, you pull up the page, and what does the customer do? How many steps do they have to take?
So it's three steps. I think it's first good to actually scroll down a little bit and see the walkthrough of what the steps are. But, you know, that's the main value proposition, is that cheaper Bitcoin price. But yeah, we're powered by Luxor. They do our shipping and logistics. They've got a global system in place, a global network in place, I should say. So you buy your mining rigs at cost with us. We get them shipped. So right now, doesn't matter where in the world you are, we just need to collect payment for the mining rigs. And then, you know, if you're a client, let's say in India, you've purchased your mining rig using Bitcoin. We then order it and get it airshipped to our facility in Paraguay within a month. You set up your hosting plan at some of the lowest rates offered in the market for mining as a service at 4.7 cents per kilowatt hour. And then you give us your Bitcoin wallet address that you want your Bitcoin rewards to go to, and the sats start to flow. And we receive just 15%, and that's our management fee. And then you click on shop rigs there if you wanted to move forward in the purchase flow. And what you will see is, if you scroll down, is we've got two options. The first option on the left has the best ROI in fiat terms, and great opportunity performance wise in terms of joules per terahash, which is a measurement of efficiency, you know, how much compute you get per watt, basically. And then the S21 on the right, that gets you the most sats on the market right now. And so we find our market splits between those that are trying to generate the most fiat versus those that are trying to generate the most Bitcoin. So we've got both as an option. Let's say you want the most Bitcoin as hardcore Bitcoiner, so you're willing to pay that premium. Click that rig count plus on the bottom right there, and you will see the air shipping cost and the import taxes added for your grand total. And, you know, those are just, again, costs that we have that we're passing through. We do have some power acquisition costs baked into the mining rig price as well, but those are our costs we pass through. And if you scroll down, you can see the checkout, and you got to click that little box, and then we've got the payment rails, and we offer a variety of means. You got to create an account first, but you know, we accept Bitcoin, Lightning, we've got credit cards, wires, ACH, you know, all the typical, and we constantly are working to improve those. And then on the back end, you know, I don't have it teed up to share the dashboard experience, but you know, we could consider that if you have me back on in the future, Nico, to show people what the experience is like on the back end, because it kind of is a bit of an aha moment when people see that bit of it.
Absolutely. Let's a little bit of a tease, right? So let's have Kent on next month, and we'll do a full breakdown in the back end and see the dashboard and show you guys that. So this is very cool stuff that you guys are building over at Saz Mining. Like I said, guys, I endorse this. Definitely check it out if you guys are interested in mining Bitcoin. But again, you don't want to go through the complexities of you know, hosting this yourself, doing it yourself. Definitely check out sazmining.com. It is Bitcoin mining as a service. And Kent, thank you so much for joining us today on Satoshi's birthday. Really, really appreciate it. April 5th, special day. Also the day of the 6102 order.
Yeah, thank you, man. Happy birthday, Satoshi. Thank you, fellas. Have fun in El Salvador for me. I'll join you at the next having.
Appreciate it. Kent, stick around the back end while I close it up.
Wait, Nico, it's Friday. They're going to rip our heads off if we don't do the meme review.
Dude, we'll push it to Monday.
Okay,
bro.
Monday
we'll
meme review, guys.
Monday. We'll push it to Monday. Got stuff to do, man. Anyways, I also want to thank my friend Tone. Guys, if you haven't already been subscribed, just check out Tone's YouTube channel. And I know, Tone, you've been producing content on another YouTube channel lately.
Yeah, I've moved my financial content to the Unconfiscatable YouTube channel, and perhaps we'll get I moved my financial content to the Financial Summit YouTube channel, and we may be rolling out the Unconfiscatable YouTube channel for more Bitcoin content. I just put the conference on sale yesterday. I haven't even told anybody yet, but anyone that's watching this that's been to Unconfiscatable or wants to go to Unconfiscatable because you've heard amazing things from Nico, who did an amazing job live streaming from that event. It is back. The dates seem to be changing all the time. It's September 16 to 18 this year, so it's 6 months away. Actually, ticket prices are even lower than last year because I'm scaling it down a bit. It will only be about 200 to 300 people.
Awesome. I'm so excited. I can't recommend the Unconfiscatable conference enough. It's you know, literally one of my favorite. I got married there, man.
And your discount code should still work. So whatever it was last time, Simply 10, or I don't remember. But
I believe it's Simply Bitcoin 10 or Simply 10. You can go to unconfiscatable.com and you can get your tickets. Get your tickets quickly, though, because the prices do go up. Guys, check out Saz Mining. Again, want to thank Kent for coming on. Guys, we will be streaming from Miami on Monday. Opti will be back in Dallas, and we'll both be in Dallas on Wednesday. We'll be streaming from I rented this sick Airbnb. We're going to be with Adam O'Brien, and it's going to be a great time. Anyways, love you all. Have an amazing weekend. El Salvador is freedom country. Bitcoin or slavery? I will see you guys later. Peace out, everybody.
Was brought to you by BitcoinWell.com, a Bitcoin-only platform on a mission to enable financial independence.